So Python is a dynamic programming language, and to prove it, I was editing material up until, like, moments ago. So we may hit a glitch or two. We'll see. All right, well, I have 401, and looks like our population has stabilized, so I will go ahead and get started. Hi, I'm Catherine Devlin. I'm here as a representative of the VIC-20 generation. We are our topic today, IPython, for non-Pythonistas, will hopefully give you an idea of what makes this tool awesome, even if you don't want to get yourself eyeball deep in the Python world. You're going to have to get yourself maybe ankle deep. All the materials for this talk are going to be at Speaker Bar. It's talk number 46. I don't think I put the link in there yet. But not only will you be able to get the notebooks that these slides were made of, you'll actually be able to download the notebooks and use them yourself. So if you're scribbling stuff, all you actually have to scribble is the number 46. And then remember speakerbar.com, which is easy because it's one of the sponsors. We're going to talk a little bit, that font is too small. We're going to talk a little bit about what IPython is, and why you might want to use it instead of your bash shell a lot of the time. And then we're going to talk about how it really addresses life's big questions. Where am I? What have I done? What does it mean? And finally, how when you've acquired enlightenment, you can share it with the rest of the world. So what is IPython? It's an interactive Python environment, which seems really silly because Python itself ships with an interactive interpreter, so why do we need anything else? That's actually the reason I didn't even use Python for several years after I didn't even use IPython for several years after I first heard of it. But in any case, this is what IPython looks like. Looks almost exactly like Python. It has a lot of enhancements that we'll get into later. Now, the really interesting thing, however, is the IPython notebook, which is underneath, it's also IPython, but it's, Here we go. We have a server which is going to run locally on my machine, and it is going to start up a browser window. The browser window connects to the server, again, locally on my machine, and that creates a new environment to run IPython in. This will take a second to load up. And this is an example. Oh, I thought I cleared all those out. Hang on. I'm going to clear all that out so that we have a fresh notebook to start with. Okay. Now, who cares? Well, Python people care. This is big news in the Python world. In 2012, IPython won the Free Software Award, largely because of the IPython notebook. The creator was the keynote speaker at the SciPy conference in 2013. The 1.0 version has been released. It's big news all over the Python world. But you don't care because you are not into Python. You don't want to be that deep into Python. Okay, I get it. It's almost a shame that they named it IPython, because that Python part suggests that it's only useful to Python people. I think I'm going to suggest that they change the name to I. See how that goes over. So why would you care? Well, for one thing, anything Bash can do, roughly, IPython can do. And I'm going to do almost all of my demonstrations here in the IPython notebook. If you wanted to do it in regular old IPython, the command line version that I was showing you back here, that's okay too. It's mostly going to have the same results, except in a few obvious cases. So, what can we do? We can do typical shell-like stuff. We can do pwd, find out where we are. We can do ls, get a list of the files that are here where we are. We could cat those files. So far, seems kind of like a shell. And you see how the IPython notebook works. Each of these is a cell of executable code. You can't see, but I'm hitting Shift-Enter, and that's what's commanding the IPython notebook to run that cell, show the results. Run the shell, show the results. How about slightly less familiar commands, like how about doing a word count? Uh-oh, that gives an error, and in fact, it gives a Python error. What's going on here? Well, what's going on is that IPython does need some way to know, are you speaking operating system ease, or are you speaking Python ease? And for a couple of these really common things, it's hardwired to know, okay, cat, ls, pwd, these are operating system commands. For less common commands, we can use the bang, the leading exclamation point, to say, seriously, send this out to the operating system. And so that's what it did. That's one way. The other way, which you will want to use when you are using IPython as a shell-like device, is a special magic command called rehashX. That was really, really boring. But what it did was it went through my path, found all the executables there, and populated the aliases within my IPython session. So now IPython recognizes WC. And pretty much anything else that the shell would recognize, IPython will recognize. I talked about a magic command. Anything that starts with a percentile like that is what we call in IPython magic. And because rehashX is kind of a not terribly obvious name, you may have trouble remembering that. You may remember that it starts with an RE and then hit tab. And just like the shell gives you tab completion, IPython gives you tab completion. There we go. And you can, as you'll notice, I am not bound to run these in order. I can move around, access any cell that I want, change it. Let's get word counts on everything. All right. IPython also offers an aliasing system, not too different from the aliasing system in, say, Bash. In this case, wget is a nice way to pull in not just a web page, but everything that that web page depends on. But in order to do that, you need to remember, oh, and then the child pages. So I do this a lot of the time if I want to download a bunch of documentation that's all linked together. The trouble is, it's hard to remember -rkpnp, so I can make an alias for it. And now get page becomes that alias. And you can define these aliases. There's IPython allows you to have a config file like pretty much everything. It's under .config, or your home directory .config /IPython, and you'll see it in there. So, oh, that was just, I demonstrated my, I forgot about that part. Let's see if I can get on the internet here. You'll have to trust me for the moment that went out and pulled in local files. All right. I mentioned tab completion. Free is one I want to run. That's funny. Am I still here? Oh, that's right. I changed the name of this file. Yeah, so it's not just with executables, it's also with the files in my directory and so forth. I mentioned there are magic commands. Yeah, the tab completion works with those too. All right. Did I mean to do that? I don't think I meant to do that. I'm not showing you the help yet. Oh, gosh. There we go. Sorry, it was hard to hit my close button. I made my my scroll bar really fat. All right. What else can the shell do that you might want to do? Well, you can use scripts. I've got a script here in my directory. I'm not going to show the whole thing. I'm just going to show the head of it. And again, I can use the bang to say, all right, go out and run that. And that's an error message, but it's an intentional error message. This is a script that runs through my path looking for any directories that are in my path that doesn't exist. It found one. Okay. So So far, this has been anything you can do, I can do. The same, more or less. But some things it can actually do kind of cooler. Instead of just running it that way, I can use the load magic and suck that up into a cell in the notebook, specifically into the next cell in the notebook. And now I can see this whole script right here. And if I try to run it now, it's going to give me an error message. Why is that? Because, again, I didn't tell it it's trying to run this as Python. No problem, because there's another magic. %% bash, meaning everything that follows, send that to bash. All right. And now it ran just like it did when I used the bang to run it from the operating system. But the bash code that I ran and the results are all up here in the notebook. So I can scroll through that all. I think this is an extra cell. Let me snip that up. All right. Of course, there's more to life than bash scripts. I understand there are people who use some kind of R language. Not quite sure why, but if that's what you're into, there's a magic for running a Ruby script. Again, right here inside the cell. Perl, I don't know why. They didn't give Perl its own special name, %% Perl, but for anything, you can use %% script and then the name of the executable that's going to execute that script. So we can do Perl. And, oh, that's probably because, like I say, I changed the... There we go. This is a trick that somebody at the dynamic languages meeting showed me. This is actually plucking out all the words that begin with a capital letter and reversing them. Exactly the sort of insane thing Perl people are always doing. So, now the cool thing here, pretend that these scripts actually had something to do with each other, that I wanted to run a bash script, a Ruby script, and then a Perl script. And there are processes where you want to do that. This is one way where all of that code can be pulled in, displayed in one place, executed in one place. So if you have that kind of Rube Goldberg process, and I've certainly had a bunch of them, you have a single place where you can see them all, review them, hopefully, maybe even understand them. So, anything you can do, bash, I, or IPython as it was formerly known, can do better. Here are some things that it can actually do better. Let's say I've got a script. Oh, I'm going to run into the... Oh, did that work this time? There we go. I've got a script. I published it on my web page. It's that same script. The load command can actually take the URL. Let me get rid of this so it's not... All right. Pretend that's not there. It's not there. Oh, gosh. All right, it didn't get the script. It got the HTML asking me to log into the conference center's system. We're going to set up tethering here. No, sorry. Settings, I hate how hard they make it to. Portable hotspot. There we go. All right, that'll take a minute. Trust me on that for the moment. All right, now we're going to start getting more interesting. ls, again, just shows the files we have here. Now, equals, you've all seen equals used to assign. Bang, you've seen me using bang to say go out to the operating system and do that. Bang equals means go out to the operating system, do this, and assign to a Python variable. So I just took the results of the ls, listing here everything that ends with a txt or an md, and shoved them into a Python variable, file names. Once it's in Python, you can start doing all sorts of interesting things, which you could in theory do with bash, but only with enough beard. And all sorts of pitfalls are there, like if you accidentally put spaces around an assignment, oh, you're doomed. But not in Python. Python's going to take care of you. So here's an example of a hybrid script. It's part Python, it's part Bash. It's referring to that file names list that we just made up there, and we're looping over it. I should be pointing with this, that's what I got it for. We're looping over the list. We're doing a little assignment. Okay, we're going to split that file name on the period. Here's a little bit of ankle deep in Python. Python method that splits a string, so that chops it into two parts, and we're assigning those two parts into the stem and the extension. We're assembling a new name by sticking a dot pickup in the middle. And then, now the bang, so we're going back out to the operating system. And we're copying, and we're referring to our Python variables from within the from within Bash. So how many times have we gone back and forth between Python and Bash in these four lines? Well, I guess five if you count the one that populated file names. Several times, I'm not sure. But the result is this nice, interesting result. We just made a copy of every file name with a backup stuck in the middle. And we did it. Now, it could be done in Bash. It'd be inconvenient. It could be done in pure Python. That'd be inconvenient, too. Because, yeah, you can get a list of files in Python and so on and so forth, but a lot of that requires, called out to standard library functions. It's a little bit verbose. This is dense packed. It takes advantage of all the Bash goodness, but it also takes advantage of the Python clarity. So it's either a beautiful hybrid or some ungodly Frankenstein's monster. I'm not really sure. Now, suppose we want to do even more. We're told, same file, but if it has more than 50 words, then we think it's important and we better set it to read only. So just to demonstrate how many words these all have. Some of them have more than 50 and some don't. So how would we do that? Well, again, I'm going to use the equal bang to go out to the operating system and then populate a backup files variable. I'm going to loop over that variable. I am going to call WC. Again, here I am calling a Python variable from within Bash and then sticking the result back into Python. This gets a little bit Pythonic. Sorry, now it's maybe up to your calves in Python. But the point is, what this is doing is it's getting the integer. We should look back again. If you remember the result of WC, we're looking for the number in the middle here, the number we're splitting on white space, then we're taking the number one element and we're transforming it into the integer. So the point is, for each line, we're ripping it apart, grabbing the string right there and converting it to an integer. And then we're printing the name of the file and the number of words. And for more than 50 words, move down a little so everybody can see. Then it's back out to Bash to change the permissions. All right. Drum roll, please. Yay! Okay. So did it work? Yes, it did. My relatively big text files are now read-only. Oh, yeah. So, hooray for ungodly hybrids. And so now I'm going to change it back to 7 so that I can clean out my mess. All right. And this is a lost cell because you've already seen how the Python variables get expanded by using the curly brackets. All right. So maybe you're thinking, this is all cool, but it involves a lot of parentheses. And I'm more of a shell person. I don't like parentheses. Well, a couple of just cute shortcuts, nothing really important here. But if we were going to use the Python round function, this is how we would normally do it. But in IPython only, don't try these things in real Python or regular Python, lead off with the forward slash, and it's going to take everything after that first command, wrap it up in parens, and then add commas. So two totally equivalent commands, but the latter one looks more terse. if you've always wished Python looked more like Perl. Similarly, these two commands are equivalent. So we lead with the semicolon, wraps the whole thing up as one string, and sends it to the function. Similarly, almost the same thing, but now with a comma, instead of interpreting it as a single string, this whole go to the head of the class, it looks at it as a whole lot of arguments separated by spaces, wraps them up in quotation marks, makes a list of them, pumps them in. So again, basically the comma just told IPython to transform this into that, which is why they gave the same result. All right. Now, when you've seen, when we assign the result of an operating system operation like this to a Python variable like output, it looks like this is a list. And it's a list, but it's a child of list that has a few extra methods defined. So instead of just a plain old Python list, it's a IPython utils text s list. Well, what does that mean? The extra methods and attributes are pretty simple. There's a dot s, which just shows the string version of it. So there, I've printed it. There's a method called, what is it called? I can't remember what it's called, so I'm going to use tab completion again. It's output.f something, fields, output.fields. And that's actually, let me show you one thing. If you, in Python, if you name a method and forget to add parens to actually call it, you get this kind of confusing, what does that mean? I wanted you to do something and you're kind of talking at me. That means, okay, you've named the method. Now what? It's a method. Great. Oh, you didn't tell me you wanted to execute it. Why didn't you say so? Well, you need the parens. Now that actually threw me a little bit when I was beginning at Python, but it is nice because it means you can pass methods around, assign it, and so forth. All right. What fields does, if you remember, I had to go, where was I? Way back here, we did a little bit of tap dancing to chop this up. The fields method on an S list forms a just kind of a shortcut. So that chopped it up itself. Now it's a list where there's an element for each line, and within each line there's another list with each of the elements in the line as defined by the write space. So no big deal, but it's kind of a shortcut if you want to then process this. How would we want to process it? Here's another hybrid script. I'm going to find out what's the smallest file in here. Not the most efficient way, but maybe easier to follow. I'm going to keep track of what's the smallest thing I've found so far with an absurdly large number. And I'm going to loop over every element in this outer list. And these elements are each a small list of their own. So this is a nested list you see up here. So I'm going to take these two items and then stick them into char size and file name. And I'm just going to see how big it is, convert it to an integer, and if it's the smallest I've seen so far, I'm going to record that. All right. So there's just an example of fields in action and some of the things that SList makes easier. Now, okay, here's another calf deep in Python thing. A lot of the time in Python, we want to define functions. In fact, even in Bash, you can define functions. I think it's a little cleaner to do in Python. The interesting thing is when you're in an IPython environment, even your functions can have this crazy hybrid bash, what do you call it? You can make these wonderful Franken functions. So the same sort of tap dancing that I was doing before to try to get an integer out of how big a file is, what's the word count, I can wrap that up into a function. And then I can just call it like that much more conveniently. So if I was going to do a lot of that, I would probably want to define a function that would get that out of the way, make it repeatable, and stick it under a nice comprehensible name. So what does this one do? Okay, so here's an example of using that word count function that I just defined. So some of the same game we've been going through before, checking out how many words are in everything, taking advantage of my function. All right. You may be wondering, this is a lot of stuff. How am I going to remember it all? Well, you're not. You don't have to. Python has a lot of powerful introspection, and IPython amps it up. One of the nice magic commands is quickref, which basically, it's your quick reference card. It's a little, it's like a man page, only better written. Well, a little better written. Another one, LS, but it's LS magic, which gives you a list of all, I'm sorry, I'm not a very good scroller. A list of all the magic commands that IPython defines. So as you get more into IPython, it's not a bad idea to just look over these and think, oh, huh, what's the, I wonder what that does. I wonder what load does. Well, Python hears you saying that in a questioning tone of voice by that question mark, and the question mark brings up the help. In regular Python, you can bring up the help slightly more verbosely. The question mark's good enough in IPython. Gives you the, here's the regular doc string, as we would call it in Python. But if that's not good enough for you, and you are a really questioning sort of person, then use a double a double question mark. And that's actually going to, oh, for crying out loud. What did I do? That was an F12. Sorry. Sometimes a browser is a tricky environment to work on. Okay. The double question mark, I'm going to try to execute that again. Okay. That actually goes out and shows us the source code. In this case, it's the source code for the load magic, but it works for anything where Python can access the source code. So, just a handy way to read the source. All right. So, the big questions. Where am I? You've already seen a little bit of this. We can see where we are. And we can cd and hop around. One hop, two hop. These are nice directories. Where have I been? Okay. Maybe you've seen the bash command that when you cd to dash, you hop back to where you were before. So I was in this open source Shakespeare directory. I said cd dash, so I hopped back to home Catherine. Okay, that's nice, but what if I don't want to be there? What if I want to be where I was when I started this all out, way back in the OLF talk? Well, that's a little more inconvenient. I might actually need to type out a directory name, and that sounds horrible. Fortunately, in IPython, I have other options. If I do cd dash and then hit tab, I get a tab completion that remembers every place I've been. And I can, in fact, choose one of these. And actually, is that going to execute it? Yeah, I'm not sure why it looked that. Huh. That's not acting as I expected. Well, that's okay, because this next one is definitely going to work. I know I wanted to go to the item in my history that had to do with OLF. If I cd dash dash tab, then I can look at them by name, and I can either select it here and go to it, or if I don't want to do that, I don't even have to look at them. I just want to, I was in that directory and it had something to do with OLF. Good enough. IPython interprets that, sends me there. Off to the Shakespeare directory. What have I done? Well, let's say I said knee. If you've seen all these I-64 and so forth, I'm going to change that number. That's actually a list. Python remembers all of those. It also remembers all of the output results. And if I want to rerun something by number, I can. The other cool thing is, what if I want to log everything I've done to a file? Well, I can say log start, and not only is that logging it all to the IPython log.py file, it's actually retroactive. Everything that I've done in this session goes out there, because I never remember in advance. You never remember in advance that you want to log it. And so There it all is. It looks a little different there because it's made it into legitimate Python instead of this IPython looking stuff. But, and of course, when you're in the notebook, this itself is your best history. The scroll bar. Go see what you did. Change it in place. You have the record and you can back up and change history. Now, if you're not in the notebook, if you're out at the command prompt style IPython, then the arrow keys and even the control R history all work as they do in Bash. So you will remember what you've done, which is really nice because your temporary experiments can become, you can edit it in place in the notebook, and once you've worked your way through to the solution to a problem, you don't have to say, okay, now how did I get here? There were so many false starts and turns around. Well, in the notebook, it's all become a line because you just went back and you edited it in place. Now it's ready to be saved. And that can be what you work from the next time. And it can be more than just the raw code commands. So here's that script that I ran before. Oh, I have to get back to where I was. There we go. All right. So I had this script, and it had some documentation at the top. But I can do better than that. In this case, what I've done is I've taken that same information that was in that doc string, and I've stuck it into IPython cells. But not all IPython cells are code cells. Some of them are markdown cells. And markdown is a syntax that takes this plain text format and makes it into good-looking HTML. So basically, this is that same script, only now its comment, instead of just being pound sign plain text, is this better-looking HTML. And I didn't do a whole lot to format it. But the point is, anything I could do in HTML, I can do in IPython cells. Same information, but when it's easier to read, more comfortable to read, more pleasant to the eye, the chance that you're going to read it and understand it improves. And that's what documentation is all about. So it's documented, but it's documented better. Now, if we want to get really deep into Python, and I'm even going to skip some of the details because I'm short on time, but this is taking the disk use command, the du command. It's checking out what I've got in my home directory. I'm going to quickly glide over some Python that I use to transform it first into this list of lists, and then I'm going to generate two more lists, and those lists are a list of bytes and a list of names. And those correspond, so you know, the zeroth element. And I'm going to plug both of those into matplotlib. This is something that only Pythonistas are into, and only a few of them. But it is, oh, like I said, I've been editing at the last minute. All right. Now I have a pie chart with my disk use. And in fact, because that all involved a fair amount of rigmarole, and I might want to do this for more than one directory without having to retype all those, this would be a good opportunity if you're inclined to learn a little Python enough to write a class. If a Python class has a wrapper HTML method, then that's what's going to be called when we try to render it out in the IPython notebook. So this chunk of code is basically duplicating what I skipped over in those cells. And at this point, I've created a class which I can pass any old directory name if I actually execute the cell to define it. There we go. Executed it and generated a class. So we can... Your Bash scripts are never going to generate output that good looking. All right. And where was it? Okay, sharing. The other cool thing about the IPython notebook is you've attained an enlightenment. You know where you were, where you're going, and all of that. It's time for you to share with the world. What can you do with it? Well, you can give presentations. The slides I'm showing, it's a reveal.js HTML-based slideshow generated from an IPython notebook. So that makes it a lot easier to mesh your code with your presentation. And there's just some of the syntax that you would use to do it. This requires IPython 1.0. I should mention that we're kind of on the cusp. IPython 1.0 was just released. Some of the stuff out there is still in the previous version of Python. You can write blog posts. And let me hope that, oh, come on. I forgot to get that going. Go, baby, go, baby, go. Connect, why don't you? There we go. Fernando Perez, the creator of IPython, has this nice blog post where he's described how to blog in IPython, and here's an example. So his blog post contains these nice cells. It's a great way to show what you're talking about. Okay. There is the IPython gallery. Just search for those terms, IPython gallery, which is, I'm going to open this one in a new tab, a gallery of interesting IPython notebooks. Just when people do something particularly cool in the notebook, they've been posting it here, which gives a great set of examples and syntax that you can crib off of to see some of the things you can do in the notebook. It's kind of dominated by people doing scientific computing, but that's okay. They're nice people. And it's time for all of us to start contributing more stuff. NB Viewer, that stands for Notebook Viewer, it's a service that runs off ipython.org. So I've been talking briefly about the notebook. What it gets saved to on disk is actually a JSON file with a .ipynb extension. It looks like that. Now, if I publish such a file, a .ipynb notebook anywhere on the web, then I can go to nbviewer.ipython.org/url and then stick in the URL of where I actually published the notebook on the web. That service goes, grabs the JSON, and publishes it. So that's a way that I can share my notebooks with people. I can just say, hey, check out my notebook at this URL and share it with people who don't have the notebook. And let me see if I have examples. Okay. Yeah, let me, so to make this a little more concrete, I published a notebook. That's what it looks like on the web. That's not what I want it to look like. So nbviewer.ipython.org/url, and then that same URL. NBviewer makes it available on the web, actually looking like the notebook, so people can read it. Now, one of the cool things here, there's a link that says download notebook. So not only can they view it, they can suck it down to their machine, and assuming they're willing to install the IPython notebook, they can then, hey, you said this stuff, but now I want to see it, and they can start tinkering with it there. So it becomes, they're not just passive readers, they can take part. Where was it? Okay, here's where I was. Another way, since this is a single file, it's really, have any of you published gists to GitHub before? Okay, only if, it's something to look up. It's a really cool way, when you have a file that you want to share with the world, you throw it up on GitHub as a single file, it's under version control, and it has a number. And that's what I did right here. So here's another way that I threw a notebook up onto the web as a gist. Now, it's not very usable in that format, but NBViewer integrates so well with that that I just take the number of that gist and, again, same thing, but just with a much shorter URL. All right. So that's one great way to share. Another really interesting way to share is Wakari by Continuum Analytics. Gotcha. Thank you. They are hosting an IPython notebook server. And what I can actually do, I can upload my notebooks to Wakari. Wakari will serve them from there. So other people can just log on to Wakari, and I will give that, oh, we're almost there. not only will they be able to view the notebooks there, they can actually execute the notebooks there in the browser without installing anything except the browser. So they can execute the cells, they can edit, they can say, I don't believe you, what if Kai is 3.0 instead of 2.0? All that makes the collaboration really, really easy. And then, if they set up an account on Mercari, they can share it back to you. Continuum Analytics is a company, but they're a really nice company. It's a free service until you get huge. They're basically looking to make money off scientists who are crunching huge amounts of data. If you're not crunching huge amounts of data, they're not chasing your money. So yeah, and these are all shareable. Your collaborators don't need Python. All right, you can write books. This is one example. This person published a textbook, again, on some really intense computer science topic. And this part is not a notebook, but each chapter, sorry for the slow network, go phone go. Each chapter of this book is published as an IPython notebook. And because he worked a little harder, you know, this is all HTML, which means you can have style sheets and JavaScript and all that amazing stuff, and he worked a little harder at it. So it actually looks more like you might want a book to look, and yet it's a notebook, which means there's that download button. So how often have you had a book that you could not only download, but you could grab the examples in the book and mess with them right there in the book? So this is about as interactive as learning is going to get to be at any point soon. All right, installation. Don't. If you're a Python head, it's not that hard to install, except for the matplotlib part, which can be tricky. Continuum Analytics, the same company that makes Wakari, also makes Anaconda, which is a Python distribution which is all ready to go with IPython and the IPython notebook and matplotlib. So if you saw, that's how I ran one of my demos, as I went into the Anaconda directory. So unless you're daring, I would just go with Anaconda. The one tricky thing there is that you're getting IPython 0.13 just before the 1.0 release. So you can't use some of the newest notebook features like generating a presentation. That's why I've actually got the Anaconda version to show my plots, and a non-Anaconda 1.0 version to do some of the newer IPython notebook stuff. I keep on checking their webpage, almost Continuum Analytics, almost every day, hoping that they're going to put out their next version of Anaconda that's 1.0 compatible. Hope for it soon. All right. So how are you going to learn this stuff? Talk number 46. And from there, you're going to find the link to this presentation, and that will give you links. I mentioned that gallery of interesting notebooks, great examples. PyVideos.org is a website that has really high-quality Python talks from conferences all around the world, and just search there for IPython or IPython notebook. Fantastic talks, better than mine. IPython in Depth is just a nice notebook. Best way to teach the IPython notebook? With the IPython notebook, naturally. Don't forget about the quickref and lsmagic command. And then, of course, I would love it if you write me. And that is all I've got. The other thing, of course, is, now, obviously, I called it for non-Pythonistas. I don't mind a bit if I lure you into the Python community, at least far enough to check out your local Python user group or PyOhio, the big conference we do at the end of every July. We have more information about that at the Python table in the exhibit hall downstairs. So, I'm ready for questions. All right. Yes. Oh, five. Okay. I've got five. Yes, the question was, how much time do we have for questions? The answer is 5 minutes. All right. Well, you can catch me at the, yes, go ahead. The output, the input and the output both go into lists.
Is there a way to keep from logging? Like, if I wanted to decrypt a passwords file, I don't want to leave that in the list.
Huh. I don't think there is, but I would not save that notebook anyplace. Yes, you can. Okay. Thank you. Yeah, it's a list. There's nothing magic about it. So you can do the same things with it. And I'm pretty sure that list is just there for your own use. I don't think that will hose the notebook. Yeah. Very good. Thank you. Yeah. Yes.
I mean, my impression is this interactive for analytics.
Right.
Can you execute this? How would you execute it without this shell?
Thank you for asking that. I should have mentioned. There you have a couple. Where's one of my notebooks? Okay. You have a couple of options. So I have to reload my notebook. One is, if you actually want to... if you want to bring up the browser, and there is a run all command, if you want to just do it all and you don't want to bother shift entering through everything. So there's the most visual option. However, you can also download as a notebook, but you can download it as a .py file. And that will dump it into just a .py file. And from that point, you could, let's do that. So I saved that as demos.py. And that went into, hang on. Now I can run that with Python. And I think this is going to work. Oop. Actually, I think I have to run this with a different, I have to run that with my Anaconda Python. Okay. Ah, I see. Oh, okay. Hang on. See what that saved. Okay. So that saved it. That's a little deceptive because it saved it as .py, but this is not actually legitimate Python code. This includes the IPython magic. So if I want to run it, what I'm going to have to do is I'm going to have to move demos.py to demos.ipy and then run that with, not with Python, but with IPython, demos.ipy. Oh, for crying out loud. It's really close to working. That's the basic idea. You can save, you can download, and then that can become an executable that you can run without opening that up. And I'm going to find out why that, I wonder if that's, I'm going to find out why that's goofing up. That's the basic idea. IPython would have to run it, which doesn't have to be in Anaconda unless you're trying to do the matplotlib and everything like that. I believe there's another way to generate a totally legitimate Python file from this, and I can't remember what it is right now. I'll do a blog post, and I'll mention that. So, okay, and I'll link to that. So, thank you very much, and I'll be at the Python booth.